Good evening, Razorback fans. Welcome to another episode of Hog Talk Podcast, live from the Sterling Soap and Roastery Studios, part of the Believe and Buzz Radio Network, where you can hear us each week on 106.7 in Central Arkansas. All live shows are presented to you by Arkansas Brewing Company in downtown Ozark. I am Porter Hayes, and alongside of me is Adam Hall, and we're also brought to you by Bet Online.
BetOnline is the world's most trusted betting platform and your number one source for everything sports betting. Every stat, matchup, breakdown, and even live odds and spreads to bet on during games. With the largest catalog of odds on everything from football, MLB playoffs, NHL, NBA, to political props. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker. Or unwind with one of our over 150 slots games. Head to the website today to get in on the action with America's most trusted site for online wagering. BetOnline. The game starts here.
Good evening, Adam. You had it right. The only one who had it right. But I don't know. We talked during the game. The Arkansas's loss, 34-10 loss to LSU. And it just seemed from the start, soft coverage. They just blew right down the field. And correct me if I'm wrong, LSU ranked 100th in rushing offense coming into this game.
Yeah, I believe you're correct.
I want to stay on that first drive. And for them to have 100 yards rushing and to be able to run the ball, and honestly, kudos to the defense for holding them to field goal, or this could have been a bloodbath. So it just seemed like the offense just could not get anything going during this game. I don't understand a bye week. You come off ready to go, and I don't understand how this team just on offense came out flat. I won't go too much into the defense because they did kind of settle down, hold LSU to a bunch of field goals. I mean, it was the number 8th ranked team in the country, but I expected a little bit better performance than this.
Well, to start the game, like, I know we won the toss, and my immediate gut reaction was we shouldn't have deferred. And one of the reasons, just because our last couple few games, you know, we've gotten the ball first, offense comes out and tries to set the tone a little bit, and this game we didn't. And I get it. Typically, if you win the toss, you're going to defer. But I'm just kind of in the sticking with the rhythm. Going back to the bye week thing, you know, one thing we talked about, and a lot of people talked about after the Tennessee game and even before it, was Tennessee coming off a bye. Is it going to hurt them? And, you know, obviously it did in that sense. But then a lot of us were, oh, a bye week's going to help us. You know, it's kind of one of those things that it hurts them, but it helps us. Doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But, you know, a lot of teams are struggling after bye weeks.
Yeah. And right here, their number 30, number 40 was better than ours. That dude, you know who I was thinking about during that game is, man, do we miss like a Brooks Ellis. Man, do we miss like a Grant Morgan. You know, you've seen what the impact that he had during that game. And from a mental standpoint, physical standpoint, how he was playing, I know LSU won that game. He was my, if I was to pick an MVP of that game, Weeks was the MVP of that game yesterday because he was all over the field, causing havoc, getting in the backfield, interceptions. I mean, it was just, what was he not doing during that game yesterday? And it really made you miss, like I said, a guys like Brooks Ellis and Grant Morgan, because we've talked about this over and over and over. Who's going to be that leader on the defense, and who's going to be the leader on offense? I mean, Andrew Armstrong's a dog. We know he's going to get his, but you see what happens when Arkansas can't get that run game going. And I had to double check on the stats, 62 yards rushing. And that's not, I mean, when you look at the net loss total, net 38 yards, they had 24 yards lost with Taylen Green with sacks. I've always said that I don't really count sacks on rushing yards, but we have to be correct on the stat sheet. Gained 62, lost 24, net of 38 yards rushing. That is unacceptable on every sense when you have an who at one time was the leading rusher in the SEC. We've seen him digress, and I know it's a lot of it is he's just not 100%. I don't think Taylen Green was 100% either.
Well, it was good to see. I mean, the game that Broden decided to show, you know, catch some balls,
yeah,
you know, it didn't work out in our favor. Because that was one thing. I think he caught like three in a row at one point. It would have been four in a row, but it was one that I think he had been pushed out of bounds. No, there's a holding call that negated it. But, you know, I was just like, okay, so now maybe we can take some shots downfield because we've got somebody other than Armstrong, or maybe we get Satania in the mix now. But Green didn't have time for anything. Okay. And, you know, looking at time of possession, 38 minutes, almost 39 minutes to 21 minutes. Total plays, 72 to 50. I mean, these are just that first quarter, really. I mean, it was 10 or 11 minutes for LSU and under 3 minutes for Arkansas, time of possession. They basically came out and did to Arkansas what Arkansas had done to Tennessee.
Exactly. And you can't do that letting them – I mean, and they were getting third downs. I mean, it was the thing that they were just third and long. They'd get a first down. Or they just get some – I mean, the tackling, I mean, just was not there in that first quarter. But, you know, that interception, you talk about these turning points in these games, the – you know, go back to K.J. Jefferson against Texas A&M and the leap and the fumble leading to the touchdown against Arkansas. We had that similar situation last night where it was close. You throw the interception, they score one play later, and it was like you just took the air out of the stadium. All it takes is one play like that to change a whole outcome of a game. Now, you can come back, but just from the confidence level, you're like, here we go again. But I will say this, and I'm only going to speak on this for the first half alone, because I'm not going – in a game like this, you can't blame the refs. But there was four calls in a row. Four calls in a row that were absolute trash, atrocious. And I was like, what are they thinking? That was a blatant – you talk about textbook targeting. That was textbook targeting. No pass interference call. And then you call a pass interference on Arkansas. I mean, it blew my mind how the refs were sitting there. And I even said it. Does the LSU really need this much help from the refs to win this game? Now, granted, second half, different story. I really think depth and wearing Arkansas down, being able to wear the O-line down and get more pressure on Taylen Green, of other things, was the turning point in the game, because they just couldn't get anything going. But they couldn't get the rhythm in the first half. And that last part, you think you're driving down the field, you score, get a field goal, and then you get the ball back coming out of the second half. You can make this a game. And I really think the refs just really – just did a piss poor job on the last drive of the game for Arkansas in the first half.
You know, the targeting one, I went back and forth on trying to figure out how they would overturn it and not call it targeting. It was, you're looking for any little glimmer of it not being in, but there was none. He launched, he hit him in the neck head area, his head jerked back.
And he was defenseless. I mean,
so that, I think needs to, hey, you know what? The SEC came out and talked about the officials of the Texas-Georgia game and the fans throwing stuff on the field and that getting overturned. Why don't you come out for that little sequence right there? I think, was it Jordan Anthony on the pass interference or the no-call pass interference? Yeah. I mean, he couldn't come back to the ball. The LSU receiver didn't have his head turned around. I mean, right there, again, textbook pass interference.
Yeah,
I mean, it was just though to end the first half that way was because you had to score and then get the ball back to start the second half. You had to do that, and the refs took that away from you.
Yeah, this is a game where you got to take advantage of every situation when you have the ball. You a game team against LSU, just kind of like you know you're an underdog. You know that they are a better football team than you on a statistical and talent standpoint. You've got to take advantage of everything. And when you have the refs do that, one, now you're putting more pressure on Arkansas to come out and score on that very first drive. When when you took away the chance for them to score. Again, I want to make this clear, and I might say it again later in the broadcast. Just to be clear, I'm not blaming the refs for the win. I'm not blaming the refs at all for the second half. This is specifically first half that I'm going into this because it's just one of the things that it was already hard enough uphill battle to beat LSU. Now you have this, and I'll bring this up later on. It's kind of give you something to ponder on. You can answer it now. You look at LSU as a team who is playing against Arkansas. It's always been a close game. Look at what's going on in the SEC. That gives them more hunger and more reason to really go out and come out on fire in this game because the SEC is wide open now. Mm-hmm. Wide open. So that just makes it much more that you have to take advantage of everything you get. You were being considered from us, other media, Dark Horse, talking about you win this game. We're talking, are you going to win out? Could you win out and be a college football playoff team? That's where this was in this turning point of this game.
I mean, I'm looking at the overall standings and what are right now. You got A&M first because they're 4-0 in conference. LSU second, 3-0 in conference. LSU, the only reason I'm not putting A&M into the upper echelon yet of that is just because of some of their games they played this season.
Yeah.
But we know Brian Kelly and LSU teams get better as the year goes on. I mean, they're honestly looking at LSU's looking at the SEC championship come December. In my opinion, unless they just falter, I haven't looked at their schedule. I don't feel like there's really anybody in their way. I mean, yes, obviously it's any given Saturday in the SEC. We've seen that week in and week out. They've got Texas A&M this coming Saturday.
Yeah.
And then Alabama, Florida, Vanderbilt, OU. So if they can get through, I'm going to say the next game, because we've seen Alabama's faltering a bit, you know, LSU can basically control their own destiny to get, a one-loss SEC team. Forget the SEC championship. You're putting yourself into the top four in a bye. I believe the top four get a bye in the college football playoff.
Yeah. You've got one loss. I mean, mm-hmm. And you're undefeated in the SEC. You really think, look at, you see Alabama and where they're at. It's in Baton Rouge, and it's at night.
Mm-hmm.
We see Jalen Milroe for Alabama. He's like, he cannot throw on the run. He missed Williams so many times. They had the opportunity time to beat that, win that game against Tennessee, but they didn't get it done. But a lot of it was the crowd. I think in the first half, they had 7 or 8 penalties because of the crowd noise. All starts, illegal procedures in the first half because the crowd was so loud. But what I want to point out is I believe Alabama has Vanderbilt next. Or Vanderbilt plays somebody.
Alabama's got Missouri.
Okay, Missouri.
And then Vanderbilt, LSU. They don't, Alabama didn't Vanderbilt play.
Plays Texas.
Yeah. Vanderbilt's already beat Alabama.
Vanderbilt's plays Texas. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's who I was thinking. But you think if Texas comes out and beats Vandy, you know, you're knocking the wind out of their sails. When it comes to, we've got this momentum, and if Texas just knocks the sails out of Vanderbilt, that just makes LSU's path easier.
Mm-hmm.
But with that being said, you still have Texas A&M, Alabama back-to-back for LSU, then Florida, Vandy, Oklahoma. There's no more divisions. So it's one of them things that it's top two teams. Top two teams.
Yeah. So, and I think, I mean, you would still, I think before this season, put Georgia up there. But now that there's no more divisions, I mean, I think you're going to see a run starting this year with former SEC West teams in the SEC championship. I mean, you know, it's one of those things that Georgia doesn't have the luxury of just having to win the East now.
You look at the rest of the schedule for, and we'll really get into this Mississippi State topic we posed right before we went on the air about is Arkansas catching Mississippi State at the wrong time because they're on the uptick. Now, not saying Arkansas shouldn't win this game because they should. I think they're still a better team. But you look at how Mississippi State's starting to play opposed to how they were playing in the beginning of the season. Must win game because then you got Ole Miss, Texas, and then Missouri as your final three. Now, Missouri has been playing significantly less football than what they started out. We see what's going on there. Even though they did come back, you know, it's the fact that they're not as good as what we thought right around the Texas A&M game. But you look at what happened to Texas A&M game. You play them tough. Then they turn around and get blown out by Missouri. Well, now you look at LSU and who they have next. You know, this could be one of them games where we say this is the drunkest that the SEC's ever been. It is.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't know what's going to happen from week to week. We don't.
Well, I'm looking at the Mississippi State matchup. I mean, the line opened up, I believe, at 7.5, or opened up at 8. It's at 7.5 now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it all is going to be on, like you're saying, Mississippi State right now, because I'm looking at the ranking comparisons, and I don't think it matches up to what Mississippi State is currently playing like, but you've got to find somebody that can run the ball. I mean, and I'm not taking anything away from Quentin Jackson, but if, you know, hurt or burnout, whatever the case may be, whatever he's fighting through, you've got to have somebody else back there. You know, whether it's Braylon Russell, I mean, you know, DeBinion had the fumble, get Rodney Hill back, whatever the case may be, you've got to have somebody running the ball in this offense.
Well, you look at the running back core, you know, Hill was out. You don't have, you know, like when you had Rocket Sanders and then AJ Green, or, you know, look at Darren McFadden and Felix Jones, you had a burner. You, like, we're talking about the receiving core, you got the deep threat and then you have your slot guys. You don't have that breakaway speed guy on in your running back. It's slow. And if the defensive line is getting pressure, you're cooked when it comes to you've got two guys in the backfield, Jackson and then, you know, Braylon Russell. They just can't get that second level speed quick enough. And you've seen that. Mm-hmm. There was a couple of times where instead of trying to find the hole, they were trying to kick it outside. You know, that's where you, as a running back, you need to really be looking for those holes. There was a couple times, well, they could have got upfield and got maybe 4 or 5 yards, opposed to they're trying to kick it outside and they got tackled either at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage. But something's going to happen. I will give this offense a little credit. They found Tesla. They got Haas involved in the game. They were trying. But I think after that little – the interception, I think that just did something to the psyche of that offense to where it changed the whole dynamic of that offensive scheme because they didn't try anything like that after that.
Like this, right here, you know, Singleton sparked the Tennessee win. I get it that he can get the credit because he was on that last drive, but it wasn't solely him. And I think in a situation like this, if you were, you know, you had Green – what you thought y'all thought were ready was ready to go, whatever. I don't feel like number 18 coming in to your homecoming game. I don't think you pull your starter, your veteran starter, for a guy that's never started a game. And I it's one of those things that you kind of have to trust. Like, I know we were all preparing for Singleton to play, but at the same time, it's kind of, they're going to put whoever out there that gives you the best chance to win.
Yeah.
This mindset of that they didn't start somebody, so that was, you know, the issue. That's what lost. I mean, they're not going to put guys out there that aren't going to give you the best option. They wouldn't be coaching if they were.
Yeah, and you got to look at it this point. You're alluding to it, so I'm just kind of piggybacking off of what you're saying. You've got to look at it, even if Taylen Green's 80%, 75%. Is that 75 or 80% give us a better shot than having Singleton behind center? That's how you're approaching this game. It's not saying that Singleton is not good. It's just who's going to give us a better chance to beat LSU? Is he good enough? Is he good enough to go that gives us that better chance? And that's who they went with. And I'm not, this is no knock on Singleton. I don't know. I mean, we seen that one drive, what he did against Tennessee. But my biggest thing is you spent half of your preparation probably thinking that Singleton was going to get the nod, and then Talen comes out. I would at least try to give him a shot if something's going awry, or give him a chance to bring it back. You know, I mean, at that point of the game, we seen that the offense wasn't getting anything really going. And maybe because at that point in time, they were getting more pressure. They didn't have the confidence of Singleton picking up the blitzes like Greenwood, or if he's not as quick as Green, being able to get out of the pocket. It could have been a thing that do you just throw him in there to try something new and then risk getting him hurt because of the pressure that LSU was getting? Or do you just stick and try to just call it, you know, call it a game and keep him out there? I don't know.
I was in the mindset of, I mean, at that point, come fourth quarter, why not put him in there and see?
Yeah.
I mean, either he sparks something or he doesn't. You know, it's one of those, the game was out of reach. I personally think the game was, it was done for at the interception than touchdown.
Yeah. I mean, when they scored one play later, I was like, okay, that's almost like a white flag. It's almost like, all right, we had our chance. We had the momentum and we run out of gas. Because after that, you've seen even – and, again, the defense did their job for, I mean, three-fourths or I mean, 90% of that game. They did. They did give a lot of yards up. And that first drive I put solely on the defense. But after that, they settled down. But that the touchdown after that, I mean, you're on two-yard line. Mm-hmm. I mean, give up a touchdown. But I think they only give up one after that. Give up a bunch of field goals and then the very last – sequence they gave up another touchdown, but at that point it was already in hand. I mean, I don't, you know, this is a weird game because it's like you don't know what happened. I think our very first comment on the show tonight was like, we just want to know what happened, but mm-hmm. we don't know. This isn't one of them things that, and we'll talk about this in segment two along with the Mississippi State. This wasn't a game where we're like, okay, the defense wasn't prepared. The offense wasn't prepared. I just think this was the better team that beat you. You just didn't capitalize on everything that you had to beat LSU. That's what I think that happened. And I think we really have to take a step back. Sometimes we ride on emotions. I did. I surely did. When you think that you still got to give the respect to LSU, that they come in here, the number 8 team in the country, they are a very damn good football team. And in that setting, you have to take advantage of everything. They did it. So therefore the better team won. And you can't really, I know this was one of them. Well, we did this, but we did this against LSU. It happens. And I think this was just it happens type of game. It just sucks because we've had too many of those with Sam Pittman.
No. And I think that, you know, listening to Brian Kelly post game, he was a bit salty. He was a bit salty that LSU was the homecoming game. And I think that use whatever you can to add fuel to your fire.
I agree with that.
You know, basically just coming out saying that you can't turn the ball over like that in SEC play. But I think the coming back with the comment about scheduling them for a homecoming, I think that's what really, really kind of drove his to just want to stick it to Arkansas.
You know, and I have a problem with that. I had a problem with him saying that and then Kirby Smart, his comments. Like, dude, you won the game. Why are we we're not in high school anymore when it comes to this homecoming. I don't see the whole homecoming thing being a huge issue in college that it is like in high school where, you know, you got the football players escorting and you're doing all this stuff. The day of the game, you're having a big pep rally. You're doing it the night before, right? You're doing nothing when it comes to preparing for this game. I think that's, I don't know. It's to me, it's a douchey comment to even make because it has no bearing on the game. It doesn't. Well, they scheduled us for homecoming. This ain't, you know, Northside, Southside. And you're like, oh, well, Northside made Southside the homecoming game. And then they got salty about it. You know what I mean? I would see that in high school because that's just what you do in high school.
I think we've already established that Brian Kelly is a bit of a douche. So,
he is. And so is, you know, and Kirby's turning into that guy. You know, he shoved the player and then right after the game. Now, granted, I would be pissed about the whole everything that happened, but dude, you just beat Texas in Austin. who was the take the win and move on. Like, but he wants to sit there and be like, well, they robbed us. I mean, like, was a couple years ago when they won the national championship, everybody had us going 5-7. You know, it's like, get real. You know, take your win, go on, but you don't have to do that stuff. And I said it. He'll probably look on film, be like, "Oh, I didn't realize I said that. I'm sorry." Well, and straight out called out ESPN and the refs. So we'll see what happens on that side of it. But yeah, it was just boo, woe is me. Like, you beat Arkansas. Don't sit there and be like, "Well, maybe they should rethink who they schedule for homecoming." Like, get over yourself.
Well, my fear going into this game, which is why I did pick LSU, was just you left everything on the field against Tennessee, and then you come out and lay a goose egg, because we've seen that too many times before. You get a big win, and then you come out flat your next game. Bye week or not, I think it still would have been a similar outcome, whether this game was last week or last night.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that. Sometimes, especially with a team like Arkansas, you're looking at, you know, Taylen Green. It took him a week to recover from the game, and now you're trying to prep for LSU when you could have really used that extra week to prep for them. Bobby Petrino could have used that extra 10 days. But now what looked like 10 days or what looked like 2 weeks, you split that time up between two quarterbacks and really preparing for this LSU team. And so – what we see is a bye week. It really kind of wasn't, because the health and the status of Taylen Green, and from what we heard, he might have only had one or two practices. We don't know how much time truly he had to prepare for LSU.
Well, and that's where you get into the coach speak, because I think Pittman said that he really didn't miss much time, but then flip side, you didn't really see much from the media coverage when it came to the practices and stuff.
Yeah, and I think they've really, you know, put a little hush-hush on that. Yeah. You know, I mean, they've kind of got that locked down. But what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. After the break, we are going to talk about Mississippi State. Are they peaking? Is this a bad time to, you know, catch Mississippi State at Starkville? We'll talk about it after the break.
Searching for premium brewing products that will take your daily routine to the next level? Look no further than Sterling Soap Company. Our handmade soaps, aftershaves, and balms are made with only the finest ingredients that give you the ultimate grooming experience. With a variety of scents to choose from, there's something for everyone. Plus, our products are crafted in small batches to ensure the highest level of quality. So why wait? Visit www.sterlingsoap.com or visit our retail store at 16 West Walnut Street in Paris, Arkansas. Shop our collection and discover the difference for yourself. Upgrade your grooming routine with Sterling Soap Company.
Are you looking for a place to grab a cold drink and some delicious food? Look no further than Arkansas Brewing Company. Located at 201 South First Street in beautiful downtown Ozark, our establishment offers a wide selection of craft beers and tasty eats. But what sets us apart is our welcoming atmosphere and friendly staff. At Arkansas Brewing Company, you'll always feel like part of the family. So visit Destiny and Christopher Brockett and staff today and see for yourself what makes us the go-to spot for locals and visitors alike. Arkansas Brewing Company, come for the drinks and stay for the friends. Attention DIYers and home improvement enthusiasts. Are you searching for the right tools and the supplies to tackle your next project? Look no further than Menards Hardware Store. With locations in Ozark, Alma, and Clarkville, our vast selection of hardware and building materials is sure to have everything you need, whether you're fixing a leaky faucet or building a new deck. Plus, our knowledgeable staff is always on hand to offer expert advice and guidance. And with our competitive prices and convenient online ordering, Menards Hardware Store is your one-stop shop for all your DIY needs. Visit us today, and let's build something amazing together.
Are you looking to take your career to the next level? Look no further than ATU Ozark Campus. As a two-year satellite campus of Arkansas Tech University, we're dedicated to a quality workforce education, industry partnerships for in-demand jobs, and tailored paths for success. Our programs are led by industry professionals. Whether it's a certificate or you're aiming for a graduate degree, ATU Ozark has you covered. Visit our website at www.atu.edu/Ozark or contact us at 479-667-2117. Your future begins here. Welcome to Ozark Area Chamber of Commerce, where our mission is simple: encourage, promote, and aid an enduring environment of shared economic opportunity and civic development for the Ozark, Arkansas area. Whether you're a local business owner or a resident, we've got something for you. Shop our unique local businesses, explore the beauty of Ozark, and savor local flavors and find cozy accommodations. Join us in building a stronger community. And to learn more, contact us at 479-667-2525. Remember, together we thrive.
And I want to welcome you back to the Hog Talk podcast. And Mississippi State's up. You have to flush the LSU game quick. You don't have a bye week to get ready for Mississippi State, but you know, Mississippi State's been playing a little bit better. They've got two wins or two losses in a row, a 10-point loss to Georgia and 10-point loss to Texas A&M. So, you know, they got blown out by Toledo 41-17. We're like, here we, you know, you start the season off, you beat Eastern Kentucky 56-7, and then you've lost every game since then.
Mm-hmm.
But they got beat by Florida 45-28, Texas 35-13, 41-31, 34-24.
You've gotten closer each time. You just hope that you don't have that little bit closer or win this coming Saturday.
Yeah, and, you know, we'll break down this more on Wednesday's episode, but you just look at, you know, they're averaging 126 yards rushing per game, and they're averaging 252 yards passing per game. So we know what it's like for Arkansas's luck to go in these games where they're not usually good at rushing the ball, and then all of a sudden Arkansas just gives up a ton of yards. They really got to brush this off because, again, look, this is why we're kind of not just as pissed off. Yes, this loss hurts, and it really makes more so of the Oklahoma State loss where you wish you'd have had that one back.
What are they, 3-4 now?
You look at that, yes. I mean, and getting beat by BYU. You really want that game back. And granted, you still have the same amount of conference losses, but you're sitting okay. You know, you're sitting decent where you could win a few more SEC games. You could still get bowl eligible. That Sam Pittman after the game was talking about, you know, still fighting for that bowl game. Now, granted, he's went from I don't know to I think we're going to be okay. I mean, he's got his signature statement for the season, and we got a good football game. I think we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. It's again, I want to see some fire. I know that there was some reports of him having some issues with his hip or whatnot, but it's again, I want to see some fire from him. You know, I want to see some passion. I want to see him really get after somebody or the team and pump them up. But we don't see that. And then after loss, we have just the same old Sam after a loss.
I mean, what's, you know, we see him from time to time get it, you know, at the refs questioning things, but go yell at one of them. Yeah. Go get in their face a little bit. Throw off your headset. Do something. I mean, you've got Petrino right there who used to be the king of doing that. You know, let him go if you're not going to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, something.
Yeah, something's got to change on the culture standpoint of that.
Well, and then, you know, I know there was frustration towards the end of the game, but you started seeing kind of some mouthing and jawing from the player I saw early on in the game. You know, there's a couple few times, and we did it several times throughout the games. People in our secondary, players in the secondary, doing this little like Tweety Bird. Yes.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm
just kind of like, look at the scoreboard when you're doing stuff like that. Like, and when the quarterback overthrows a pass or it's a bad pass, you didn't defend that. So, you know, this whole like, you shut down a receiver, you're going to taunt him, whatever. Like that, some of that just needs to kind of go away. But, you know, I saw it in other games too. The opposing team who was down taunting fans or taunting the other team after a play or a score. And it's just like, you need to read the room and look at the scoreboard because you really shouldn't be doing that at this time.
Is the media going to call Mississippi State a must win? Would a loss really affect Sam Pittman? Because I'm not sure the administration really gives a damn. Yes, must win. Absolutely. because you got to look at where you're at in terms of you pick up this win and then look where you're 2-2 in conference right now, 4-3 overall. You really wish you were 5-3 right now with that game against Oklahoma State, but you're still 2-2 in conference. You lose this game against Mississippi State, you're sitting at 2-3 on the road, 4-4 overall. And then you've got Ole Miss, Texas, Missouri. And I'm not, this is no disrespect to La Tech. I'm strictly talking about SEC, who you got left on the SEC schedule left. You dropped to 2-3 in the conference and you still have Ole Miss, Texas, and Missouri left to play. Yeah, this is a must win.
You're 7 games in. So whether the administration, as he said, gives a damn, whatever. I mean, it's one of those things that I don't think, I mean, Southern Miss just fired their coach. I think he's the first casualty of this college football season. There's no point, in my opinion, unless you've just completely lost your team, to fire a coach at this point in the season. And not that I'm saying that we're meaning that by any means. It's just, this is regardless of what the administration thinks. This is a must-win game regardless. Even if we had won yesterday, I still would look at this game as a must-win game.
Yeah. Yeah, because you can't sit there now. Let's play it out like it happened. You beat two top 10 ranked teams back-to-back, and then you go and lay an egg against Mississippi State. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, I would say, honestly, hot take, that if you won both of those games and then lost against Mississippi State, it would be really bad, because now you're setting yourself up for, I mean, you win last night's game. You're in the talking conversation of winning out, and or even if you drop to Texas, get beat by Texas, you're still in the conversation for a top 12 team. Now, if that happens or not, I mean, I think those talks are pretty much over now. I mean, you could still win out and have two losses in the SEC and still be talked about, can this team be a dark horse or a really good bowl game? I don't know. But right here, more Saban, less Kumbaya Sammy. Look at what's going on with Alabama right now. Look at why Saban got out. Look at why the coach at Virginia got out. They're leaving because they do not like this new era of college athletics. And a part of me is laughing at it. Because so many years, you can't control the players. You got to be making all this money. And now the players are doing this, whether it's ruining college football or whether it's not this or that. Just because things now are getting even, I think things are getting even in college football. Look at what's going on around the college football. Look what's going on in the SEC. Vandy. You know, look at what they're doing. Look at teams like what Arkansas has been able to do, come back. Yes, they're 4-3, 2-2, but look at teams like Arkansas. You know, and now you have this Saban effect where he's out. You look at DeBoer. He's not that type of guy where you're not getting your guys together. And I have a feeling that that's part of it.
Well, looking at, I mean, it's all a bit funny just for the fact that nobody cared when we didn't know about it. The players have been getting paid for years. It's just now it's public. Mm-hmm. Now the smaller schools can figure out ways to get players money. So, you know, until there's I think it's too far gone for the NCAA to step in when it comes to NIL. I know this next season, they're going to attempt it with the third-party arbitrator reviewing all NIL deals over $600. But at the same time, you know, it's one of those things. Handshake deals can still happen. You can still get McDonald's sacks full of money. I mean, they can work around this. So until you get, I think, like a CBA, which I think is the next step for college athletics, you know, it's Wild West.
Yeah. And again, you know, you should have, I mean, they have it in the pros. You have contracts, you have salary caps, you have things like that. You know, that's where I think everybody should be able to make money. But it doesn't always mean that. Look at Ohio State. They supposedly spent $20 million on their team, and you still are getting beat by Oregon. You know, it doesn't matter how much necessarily you pay your team or how much talent you have. They still got to go out and win. Look at, I'll bring back up Alabama. they have just as much talent on their team as anybody in the country. But we see when it comes to playing, we see from the mental aspect of it, they're not the same Bama that wants to go out and crush everybody. They want to make their money, their highlight reels, and that's pretty much it. I see too much of this going on other teams where it's a close game in the fourth quarter or you're down by 14 and we're on the sideline laughing. We're sitting here dancing or we're doing these turnover celebrations. We're not really in the game. And I think a lot of that focus, because now you're focused on you and your money, which I think you should make your money and make as much as you need to, but you still got to go play for your team. Because I'm telling you right now, let's throw this out there. I'll bring up Tom Brady, best quarterback of all time. But I guarantee you, if he went 3-4 games in a row and he was throwing two picks a game or he was going for 11 of 25 for 250, they would bench him. You know, running back, if you're caught fumbling the ball or you're doing this, that, they would kick him out of the game. You know, that's where the thing is, you wouldn't be playing. So it goes with this saying, this is, I know there's a lot of coaches and a lot of old school people that don't like the new age of football. I'm one that I love it because I'm getting to watch, look, from 11 o'clock till 10 o'clock, we're watching great football. We're seeing more games 2-3 weeks in a row that are very good games in different leagues, and it's all because of this NIL. Everybody's getting a chance to eat, but I still think there needs to be a limit and a little bit more control on it.
Oh, definitely. I think you've got to either you've got to regulate it somehow. I don't know if capping's the right answer, but you've got to regulate it somehow. You've got to cut down on the transfers. I mean, there's a number of things that you've got to stop doing. I mean, hell, I think I was reading this story last week or the week before. There's a player on USC's team. So originally he had committed to Georgia, decommitted from Georgia, committed to Georgia again, played at Georgia, transferred to USC. He has been at USC this offseason, and then in September he decided to redshirt for the rest of the season so he can transfer again.
Money.
And this is a guy that they're still talking as a NFL defensive lineman. You know, it's one of those things that these guys now, you know, you've got to wait your 3 years post high school for you to be able to play in the NFL. And some of these, I'm just sitting here thinking, like, are you just kind of buying your, like, you know, you're a guaranteed lock for the NFL. You just buying your time so you don't really have to deal with potential injury until you're draft eligible. You know, it's one of those things like with Arch Manning, and which I know they pulled yours yesterday to put in Arch. And I'm not saying that this is his situation, but, you know, he's in year two. It's one of those things that, why wouldn't you, like, you know, you're going to get drafted based on your name and the hype alone. So it's one of those, if you didn't play next year that much or very little or at all, you know, you're still going to get drafted and you're going to be eligible. Would you go for it?
No, and I'll say why. Football is a totally different sport than any other sport to where you have to game reps. This isn't baseball where you can do your drills and get better as a baseball prospect. You can't go to these camps for basketball or do these overseas elites or these AAU runs and get better as a basketball player playing against other people. In football, you have to do game reps. You have to go – it's almost – look at 7-on-7 – saying you're the 7-on-7 champion, then you go 3-7 in your regular season. You know, you have to have those true game reps, picking up blitzes. You can watch all the film you want, but you've got to go out there and be able to pick everything up and learn. And that's where I think football is different. I think that's where it sets everybody back. You look at a Rakeem Boyd who tried to do that. You have trouble adjusting. You have all these players who want to sit out, and then they have trouble making it in the NFL because you need to go out there and play 11-on-11 football to sit there and excel, because you got to love, live, and breathe football to make it in the NFL, make it in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't love it and you are going out there and you're just doing it about the money in college, it's not going to transition as much into the NFL opposed to those other sports that have that luxury of you can just sit out a full year, go to overtime elite or go to the G League and then come out and average 20 a game in the NBA.
Well, and the bad part about some of that, like that player in particular, is I think there's always going to be a team that welcomes him. Yeah. So, you know, it's one of those that, you know, he's left Georgia, he's quit on USC, and there's always going to be somebody that's wanting a competitive edge, they're going to take him in. Because I think that's something that we see a lot of, you know, with your last chance U teams. They are, I mean, granted, I'm not taking anything away from the coaches that they've had on those shows, but those teams, you know, take the risk for the high-profile players, welcome them all in, welcome all the problem child in to run shop in those leagues or conferences, divisions, whatever.
Yeah.
But you would just like for, and this can, this is going to sound probably more hateful than I mean it to be, but at some point you just wish that some of these kids who do this would just run out of chances when it comes to just team hopping that finally.
And I think they do. I think karma comes back on them because you, the guy that was at Florida and they were going to get him, get the coach for tampering or whatever. Then he goes the court. It was the quarterback. The
quarterback. Yeah.
The quarterback. Where's he at now?
I don't even know.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. I'm not trashing the kid. I'm saying the situation.
Yeah.
You do all this money chasing. Because guess what? If you're good enough, you're going to get more money in college. And guess what? You're going to get more money in the NFL. Because if you think you're going to sit there and excel in a college atmosphere and then go into that interview room where they're going to want to invest not thousands in you, you're not getting money from donors. You're not getting money from fans or roundup change from people. You got somebody that's wanting to invest millions of dollars in you. Because guess what? That one room... wrong move could affect the whole program or the NFL franchise for years to come.
Mm-hmm. Because and these players need to realize too, it's not, it doesn't last. Yeah. It's not guaranteed. You know, the money thing, let's look at what Adrian Peterson, what's going on with him right now. He's bankrupt or whatever total assets he owes right now is more. I mean, it's in the millions upon millions. Yeah. So you've got a guy that made buku's money in the NFL during his time broke. I mean, a lot of these guys, it's just kind of like, what are you going to do after 2 or 3 years? Yeah. And I don't think any of them have an answer.
And that's where a lot of guys have been crapping on this guy, rightfully so, because just how the culture was perceived at his school. But you look at Deion Sanders, what he was talking about. What are you going to do after football? And look where they're sitting now. You're sitting at 5-2. You're 1 win away from being bowl eligible at Colorado. You talk about what he's done, turn around, and as much crap as he's got, but he's always taught, what are you going to do? It's nice to have the watches. It's nice to have the cars, but what are you going to do after football? What are you going to do with that money? And he's trying to teach them a way. And again, not a lot of people's happy on how he does it, but I mean, at some point, what he is doing is working. I mean, they didn't have Travis Hunter the whole second half, you know, and You see what the turning point in 1 year is going with that program. But you look at Vanderbilt, what's going on at Vanderbilt? One year, you see what's going on.
Well, Coach Prime, I mean, I look at, to me, if which obviously my opinion means nothing to him or whatever, but, you know, your word really doesn't mean a whole lot unless you stay there past your son's being there. You know, just, you know, it's one of those things to me. It's like if you dip as soon as your son's at the NFL, then what you've been teaching and saying and preaching doesn't mean jack, in my opinion.
And I agree with that. I mean, that's the thing. You know, it's like how he is as a person compared to what he's doing in the coaching. I mean, I understand there's two different views on that. It's just he has been trying to preach up what can you do after football, you know. And
yeah, I get that.
And that's what needs to happen. I think, you know, we preach on it in high school about these classes. And I'm sure there's some collectives. I believe Arkansas does it with their collective where they really teach these kids how to manage their money. If they do get an agent, they're teaching them how to invest. I think that's so beneficial. These kids are making a lot of money and they can sit there and potentially put 30, 40% of that into anything where they can invest. And then you've got generational wealth. I mean, that's the benefit of you've got these guys going to college for 6, 7 years, 8 years because they're getting NIL money. Hey, more power to them because that's probably going to, unless they wind up on a roster or a practice squad, that's probably the most they're ever going to make.
So I have a question, and this has nothing to do with Arkansas. Let's compare. I'm going to compare two situations that are similar but different. So you have Coach Prime and his sons. What is the difference between, say, that and LeBron and Bronny from the aspect of how much hate that LeBron and Bronny get?
Because the fact that – God, I'm going to get crushed by LeBron fans for this because I'm an MJ guy. Sanders has actually performed.
Okay.
You got a guy that was at USC averaging 3-4 points a game. If he was not Bronny James, he wouldn't – I don't even know if he'd be in the G League. That's where that comes in. Now, granted, he's not saying that he takes it and ends up being a good career. I mean, everybody – look, I've been in the world of when you're in sales and networking. I mean, it's all about the right connections. And we could sit here and hate on that kid all we want. We can hate on LeBron James. He's trying to do the best of what we would do for our sons. It's just the situations are different because one actually excelled in college and where they're at in their position now, one didn't. Now they're getting the opportunity. But you know what? That's life. No. I'm not going to sit here and hate on as much as I'm not a LeBron guy. I'm not going to hate on their position on what he has done for his son because I would do it for my son.
And I know
Coach Prime try to open those doors.
And I know Coach Prime gets a lot of heat. Or I should say the Suns, I think, get heat because of the whole situation, if you will. And, I get the whole Bronny shouldn't have been drafted or shouldn't have had a chance. I totally get that. I just go back to the outside of Patrick Beverley, who's the last number 55 pick in the NBA draft that you can remember.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, there's only one reason that I know that Patrick Beverley was drafted 55th.
Exactly.
You know, you hear a bunch of things like, oh, he took that spot away. It doesn't really amount to anything.
He took a G League spot away. Let's be honest. He took a G League spot away, and we'll really see what happens in the regular season. But going back and playing devil's advocate on the Colorado side, Bronny's not out there flexing Rolexes. Bronny's not out there flexing and doing this. I mean, so it is, there's been situations on both sides, but different aspects. We know how Bronny got to the NBA, but look at the LaVar Ball situation and what he did for those kids. Same situation. Yeah. He might have been going out there and spewing hot air, but guess what? He became famous. He got all three of his kids in situations where they could better themselves. And in the grand scheme of it, how many ESPN commentators are now just spewing hot debates and not even believing what they say, but they're doing it because that's how things are done now.
Ridiculous.
Sometimes you just got to do what you got to do to get where you want to go. And that's what it happens when it comes to this. And you have a turnaround. And I think that we're going to see what really Ronnie's about, because if he doesn't hit the floor, he's not going to. But the problem I have is the fact that the head coach and all of them are in cahoots together.
Oh, yeah. So
we'll see. But all it's going to do is hurt the franchise, because he goes out there and gets 2 points or average 3 points a game. Then all you're doing is you're hurting yourself. You know,
I just look at it like you got 13 to 15 guys on a bench. It's not going to make that much. Like, how many guys on how many teams outside of 7 or 8 players can you name?
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those that it's not going to amount to much.
Yeah. And, you know, both get hate. I know Deion gets a lot of hate, but also, I mean, I don't know how many people's hating on him right now.
No,
because
5-2.
They're winning.
Yeah.
If they were 2-5, how much hate would they be?
Winning cures all.
And that's where we're at with the Arkansas program. That's why I really want this team to put – I wanted them to win so bad. I picked them to win because I wanted them to put these two wins together. I wanted the game – and I'm not going to call Tennessee game a fluke because you won the game, but where you could be sitting as a program moving forward with that win and getting that golden boot and getting another top 10 victory at home, and then you have Mississippi State, because we know – you beat LSU, then you beat Mississippi State. You're sitting very good when it comes to where you could be in the SEC. You'd be 4-1. If you beat LSU, Mississippi State, you're 4-1. in the SEC heading into the Ole Miss game.
Well, you wanted to ride high. Huh?
And at least you dropped the last three. You're 4-4. I mean, that's what I'm trying to get is you win, you beat LSU, and you win on Saturday. The worst you can do in the SEC is 500. When is the last time that's happened that in a scenario, the worst you could do is 500 in the SEC?
It's been a long time. So, well, I know we were wanting to ride that win potentially into Friday with Kansas coming to town. Because basketball's starting, folks.
Yes.
Calipari is here.
And we'll really talk into that. And, you know, Wednesday's show be a condensed show. We'll be talking Mississippi State, Kansas, you know, other things going on around the SEC. If another coach says something that we, you know, we want to bring up, but yes, it's basketball season. Hey, like your meme, you can go to sleep at night, sleep a little comfortable knowing that the Cal's here. Hopefully they don't pull the wool, you know, the rug out from underneath our feet, you know,
we'll be all right.
But Adam, you got anything else before we wrap it up?
No, sir.
All right. Well, do not forget, coming in 30 minutes, Adam will be back with you with Matt Hart, DP, and the guys. Hog HQ Live. Always bring in. I love the lineup, Adam. I love that we've been able to partner up and have these two shows. Same kind of – it's two different shows, mm-hmm. same network. I love the fact that we've been getting a lot of views on both shows. A lot of fans, a lot of reactions, a lot of interactions, and we're going to keep that going. We have both shows. Again, we're talking about our streaming, mainly going to YouTube. We'll see how that goes. We've been getting a lot of love on Facebook, so I don't know if I'm going to end up moving away from that. But, again, want to thank all of our sponsors, Believe, Bet Online, all of our local sponsors. But come back at 30 minutes, catch Adam Hall and the guys on Hog HQ. We'll talk to you all on Wednesday. Mm-hmm.